Vax Matters, the podcast to improve your knowledge of all things vaccines and immunizations. So let's get started.
Welcome to another edition of Vax Matters. Our conversation today centers around young children and COVID. Joining us with her expertise is Dr. Tanya Hunter, the Regional Medical Director for Region 8 in Northeast Louisiana. Hey, Doc, welcome to Vax Matters.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be able to participate in this podcast and just inform our communities about COVID in young children. I'm really concerned, I guess, that we kind of overlook maybe the seriousness of COVID in babies and small children. I think a lot of times we kind of have been believing the myth that COVID is not as serious for babies or young children, and they don't see the infection rates that adults do, or they don't have as serious an infection as an adult would. But we do see COVID in small babies and children. Newborns can get COVID just shortly after birth, or if their mom was not vaccinated during pregnancy, they can have COVID and test positive in the nursery. Pregnant women, for that reason, should really take some precautions and be vaccinated. And then when the baby is born, we should kind of minimize exposure to these small children so that hopefully we can prevent the transmission through respiratory droplets when the baby is in the family home or after the first few days of life.
You know, you are so absolutely spot on. The point being that we've not heard, or at least I haven't heard that much about COVID in infants and young children. And I don't know about when you were saying kind of that's a myth that it doesn't impact, but you know, the thing is that it does, and we need to be aware and we need to know what the facts are regarding this matter. So this can happen and it can be serious. Is that right, Dr. Hunter?
This can happen and it can be serious. I think we really have to pay attention to babies and symptoms. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, babies can't talk, of course. So when you're trying to ascertain whether a baby is ill, you kind of have to look for things that, you know, ring those alarms. You have to make sure that if the baby has a cough, if the baby has fever or chills or shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, those are some things that you can kind of see in a baby that mama will recognize and know. They will listen and hear maybe just some rattles or a different stress to breathing that normally isn't there. And especially a persistent cough that, you know, causes crying or causes, you know, excess mucus or a cough that, you know, is different, especially with fever. The baby would tend to not be as active or not be as alert. Children can have different symptoms, but we have to be careful and recognize those symptoms and make sure that we are paying attention so that if we need to test and diagnose, we can.
That's important, as you said, to pay attention and to be able to diagnose what it is, because it goes beyond just the typical, the infant illness or the small children illness. If something seems amiss, doesn't seem quite right, that's when the caregiver, the parent, the mother needs to ask questions, because I would imagine you would have that innate ability to think, well, this just isn't typical for a baby or for an infant or for my child. You've got to pay attention that this could be something beyond it. It could be COVID.
Right. I love that. And, you know, we all have that mama sense. You know, you kind of know when your baby's not acting the way in which they usually do, which means they're not as they're not eating the same. They're not, you know, resting as well. There's some things that, you know, really should set off some red flags. And I think recognizing those symptoms early is so very important. You know, it's important for mamas to realize, or parents to realize, when to call for emergency, when to call 911, basically. If your baby has difficulty breathing or catching the breath, you know, if we're not keeping down any fluids, any liquids, if there's difficulty waking the baby, or if the baby is just sleepy and not active, not cooing, not, you know, opening the eyes and being alert as usual, that's a concern. There's an illness there and we need to diagnose. And especially if there's a discoloration, especially around the mouth, if the lips appear a little blue or pale, or, you know, different color, that's serious. And those are symptoms that we definitely need to recognize and call for emergency help.
Let me ask this. You've heard people talk about colicky babies who may have some of what you talked about, a little bit of the rattle, the cough, some of those things that you might, that are not totally uncommon with infants. So how can you differentiate between what would be considered a sickness or an illness that babies get versus symptoms of COVID?
Well, I think the symptoms of COVID will be persistent.
Okay.
You know, it's common for a baby to have a little cough here
right,
and there.
Right, right.
They may, you know, be more tired or take a longer nap than usual. But I think fever, chills, any kind of symptom that is abnormal or unusual, temperature greater than 100.4. If you have a thermometer at home and you take your baby's temperature and it is greater than 100.4, then you need to address that and make sure you're calling either the pediatrician, calling the emergency room, or making sure that baby has medical attention, because it's something that, you know, you shouldn't overlook ever, a fever in a baby. And a persistent cough, the inability to eat, the inability to rest well, those are all things that we really have to address and make sure that we're paying attention to, as far as suspecting a viral illness such as COVID. I think that there are some children that are more at risk from COVID, and those would be, you know, kids that are under age 2. And again, because it's so important to realize these children can't talk and communicate their symptoms. Mm-hmm. So you are basically, I hate to say it, but reading their minds, or, you know, assessing their symptoms and their patterns and their habits to be sure that they're acting normally and not exhibiting symptoms that could be a more serious evidence of a more serious infection. Black and Latino children are affected by health disparities, and they are disproportionately vulnerable to severe COVID-19 complications. So we have to be especially careful in those populations to recognize symptoms and not ignore symptoms, making sure that those patients have access to care and evaluation to see and test if they are positive for COVID. Those who were born prematurely, those kids who came a little bit early before their due date, sometimes they can be at more risk of a viral infection, and COVID tends to hit those kids a little bit differently and a little bit more severely. Anyone who has asthma as a child, or any kind of chronic lung disease, those who are obese or have chronic illnesses or medical illnesses, those kids also sometimes may be more at risk or at a higher risk for contracting COVID-19 in the first place, and then having a more serious case of COVID-19, often needing medical care or admission or evaluation in an emergent setting, instead of it being more mild symptoms consistent with like a common cold.
You know, doctor, we were talking prior to the podcast, and COVID is going to be with us forever. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be from now on for our lifetime. So do you think, in your opinion, do you think that sometimes now that we're in 2023, that maybe parents aren't as apt to think if my baby is lethargic or this or that? Do you think that that COVID is still on the forefront of their mind, thinking this could be a possibility, or it's just a childhood of the infant, an illness? Do you think they think COVID, like they should? I'm just curious of your opinion on that, because you've seen it all.
Right. And I do think that, sometimes, I guess if you are going back, I guess this is 2023, from 2020 on, I think that COVID has been at the forefront
of everything.
Our differential diagnosis. I really think that at first, when a baby would have a cold or a cough or symptoms of such, we would think more RSV, we would think more flu, we would think more norovirus, things that are more common amongst kids. But, since 2020, I think we have, COVID has bumped some of those off the top of the list.
Yep.
And it becomes a little bit more of a consideration when you're trying to diagnose and evaluate children for these respiratory symptoms. COVID is going to be with us forever. I hear all the time, I'll be glad when COVID is over,
folks
say that,
wishful thinking.
Right, exactly. As if it's going to go away and we're no longer going to see it in our communities or in our populations. I think it's important for us to realize that COVID is here to stay, and we are going to have to take those precautions that really help us to fend off and protect ourselves from COVID infections. I think the number one way to do that is to vaccinate. It's important for children, especially, to get vaccinations. And basically, when you are vaccinated, you're building a system of, think about it like you're putting on armor. You're putting on a protective coat so that viruses and other illnesses cannot affect you. You have built a wall of protection so that you will not encounter at least the serious effects of certain viruses that you have been immunized against.
What is multisystem inflammatory syndrome?
Multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children is a syndrome that presents but is treatable as long as that child is brought to the hospital and it is addressed and recognized. So I think that's important. Mm-hmm. If there is a myocarditis picture or heart symptoms or anything like that, that is very treatable. But it's important for parents to recognize if their baby has any of those symptoms, because this would be a small child, a small toddler, something like that, and bring them to the hospital and make sure that they are under the care of a physician in an acute care setting, so that we can make sure that there's no permanent damage from something like this.
Well, that's when you were talking about that, Dr. Hunter, that was my question. That was my thought, that you said that it doesn't happen very often. It's not common. So we want our listeners to know that it's not common. But I was wondering about what the prognosis is with children like this. Again, getting the medical care, the emergency care as quickly as possible. So does it take a while? What would the prognosis be?
Well, usually the majority of patients who have COVID myocarditis, which is probably the most common, it's a heart complication that we see most often. And if that myocarditis in children manifests, it usually goes away. Honestly, goes away after a few days or a few weeks, and we're able to treat and support the infant and make sure that we're able to, make sure they're able to breathe, make sure they're able to maintain circulation and maintain their vitals. Then after the infection has been symptomatically treated, then usually we're able to see kids recover. Most cases of myocarditis are self-resolving. It's something that, you know, kids are so resilient. Mm-hmm. And I think when they are infected with a virus, you know how when kids break a leg, you know, if we break a leg as adults, it takes forever. We have to walk around in a shoe boot forever, right? Yeah. But a kid breaks his arm. And I mean, you know, honestly, 6 weeks later, we are playing and using that limb. And so they are so resilient. I do think that if there is such a complication, basically, those kids are able to, once treated, be able to resolve that, and that usually goes away without long-term residual complications.
It's so interesting because you've given so much information just thus far about this topic. And for people who may be wondering, okay, where can I go to outside of Vax Matters, of course, where can I go to get information on this if someone is planning to be or already expecting, as a parent, a baby?
Well, I think your number one resource is going to be your pediatrician.
Okay.
I do think that, you know, the pediatrician that's caring for your baby is the doctor and physician provider that knows your baby and is able to provide the best care and give the best answers to questions regarding the plan of care and the schedule of care for your little one. It's important that you have a provider that you trust, that is available to you. You know, it's important that parents feel like they can call the pediatrician and ask questions. Mm-hmm. And if the baby is sick, I can remember when my kids were small, I used to tell the folks at work, I'd be like, okay, the baby is sick, everything stops. It is so important for a parent to be able to address a concern and ask a question to their pediatrician or their pediatric nurse practitioner or whoever, their family doctor, those folks who are available to take care of your baby. They can answer those questions and really kind of give you the best information, the most current information, and the best recommendations for if your baby's symptomatic, what your next steps should be. And if, you know, you're just concerned and want general information, they would be able to provide that first and foremost to you. I know we're all tempted to get on the Dr. Google. We are. I just want us
Dr. Google, yeah. Oh, brother.
Just be careful, know, about Googling information, you know, from sources and you know, especially our social media sites, because everybody knows someone who has had, you know, complications from a viral illness, specifically COVID, flu. You know, there have been instances where children have had diagnoses or complications after having COVID that I guess want to be publicized. Sometimes folks just want to share that. And it does create an element of fear and hesitancy around COVID-19 and viral illnesses in children, which is why I again stress the importance of receiving good, correct, concrete, and current information from your healthcare provider.
And, you know, I think it goes full circle too, Doctor, when you were saying it's just so important to have a good relationship with your family doctor, with your medical provider. They are going to help you walk through this. You all see this. We don't. You know, we don't. And that's another thing. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Sometimes we don't know what questions to ask. And we think, well, this is a silly question. I shouldn't ask. Or I shouldn't bother the doctor. I shouldn't bother the nurse practitioner. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's your child's health. That's what you're trying to make sure that you understand. And it's in the long run is going to help everybody be on the same page. And, you know, you made a point too about children and the long-term effects. You know, is there, you know, we hear a lot about adults and long-term COVID. Is that the same thing with children? Is there a long-term effect with COVID in infants or in children? Can you discuss that a little bit for us?
You know, it's a little bit less clear about, I guess, the effects of long-term COVID in children.
Okay.
I do think that, again, I stressed earlier that children are so resilient. They can handle so much as they are continuing to grow and continuing to thrive. Kids, again, have the ability to handle insults, unlike adults that have comorbid conditions that sometimes can prolong the effects of a viral insult in a different way than when that same virus affects a child. So I think it's important to realize that, you know, long COVID in some ways may exist in children. There can sometimes be a headache syndrome. There can sometimes be a dizziness syndrome. That's the most probably the common complication that I have encountered with children who were affected with COVID. They might develop what we call a lightheadedness or a dizziness when they change positions from seated to standing. That's something that's described as far as long COVID in children that we sometimes see. The other symptoms of COVID as far as neurological or multi-organ effects or autoimmune conditions, those things are not necessarily as common in children. And I think it's important for us to look for those things. But those would occur more often, I think, in adults, and especially adults with comorbid conditions. The coughing, chest pain, fatigue, as much as 6 months after being infected, you know, some of those things we can see more in adults who have what we call the long COVID. Sometimes a sense of taste or smell is a long COVID symptom that we can sometimes see. Headaches, brain fog, difficulty with concentration. But it's still kind of questionable as to how frequent these symptoms manifest and what we can expect as far as statistics and how we're going to be able to treat the kids that do have these long COVID symptoms. I do think that the symptoms may not be the same for adults versus children. And I think that when you have COVID, it's important for you to follow up with your pediatrician, again, your healthcare provider, your family practice doctor or nurse practitioner who is your primary care physician or provider to make sure that you're not having trouble returning to your pre-COVID level of activity. So if kids were involved in sports and they were playing soccer just fine and then they had a COVID infection and now they have issues or they're not able to endure or sustain their physical activity for as long as they did prior to their COVID infection. I think that it's important for us to monitor those children and make sure that that resolves completely so that we don't see just a deterioration in their endurance levels and their activity levels based on what is presumed to be a post-COVID or a long COVID manifestation. So I think it's important if babies do have COVID or children do have COVID to really watch to make sure that there's not kind of a cognitive brain fog or a change in their school, their grades, their attention, their focus, and make sure there's not a change in their physical fatigue, like what used to not make them tired now makes them tired. We've got to make sure that there's not persistent headaches or any mental health or behavioral issues that could persist as a long COVID symptom profile.
It's good to clarify this. You know, we needed the experience that you've had, that you have seen, to know what parents should be looking for,
right.
what they will do then,
right.
to talk to their physician, because that's the important thing to know and to give that suggestion, that advice, if the child is lethargic or whatever, because they know their child better than anybody else.
Right.
So that was my point. Thank you for clarifying that here to let parents know, pinpoint what to expect.
Right, right. And what's your recommendation about vaccinations, if a parent is wondering?
Well, I think all kids should be vaccinated. This is so important. And, you know, kids as young as 6 months old can be vaccinated now. The vaccines have been proven to be safe. The vaccines have been proven to be helpful in reducing the incidence of COVID in communities, as well as the seriousness of the disease if someone does test positive and contract COVID. It's important for us to maintain the vaccination and immunization schedules, including a COVID vaccine for children as young as 6 months old. So the common ones that we hear are the Moderna and the Pfizer. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a schedule for the kids. Moderna's vaccine is a two-shot dose, basically. We give it's a quarter of the strength of the dose of adults. And the first shot is given, and then the second shot is given 4 weeks after the first. The Pfizer is a three-shot process, and each dose is only, honestly, a tenth of the adult version. The first two shots are given 3 weeks apart, and then the third is administered at least 2 months after the second shot. So it's important for parents to realize a vaccine is a vaccine. It is a shot. And sometimes when we give shots to the babies, of course, they're going to have some local tenderness and, mm-hmm. you know, cry. And, you know, I think we at the doctor's office try to make it so that they get a Band-Aid of their choice and a sucker and a sticker.
Yes.
And make sure that
always makes that me feel better.
Yes. Absolutely. Uh-huh. To make them feel better and to make them realize that this is important for their health. And I think kids, again, are so resilient. And I think they once they realize that this is helpful instead of, you know, a punishment or, you know, I'm going to take you and get some shots.
Oh,
we can't, we can't do that. We've really got to encourage our babies to take care of themselves and our infants and our toddlers and our young folks to really say, we're going to the doctor and the doctor is going to help us
exactly.
to stay well.
Yes.
The doctor
exactly.
is a good, mm-hmm. you know, a good visit. This is a positive place to be. And receiving your shots, you know, it's a proud moment when you can say, I got my shots and I'm now vaccinated. Again, it's like putting on a protective coat.
Yep.
I have my armor. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to go out into the world and play to my heart's desire.
There is so much value in not creating a stigma about going to the doctor with a child.
Absolutely.
There are
yes.
people who are still terrified of yeah. doctor's offices. You hear, like, I've never been worried about needles. They don't really, it was never a thing. And it was not, my nerves weren't ginned up like, oh, you got to get a shot today. It's going to hurt. It was just like, but I think that's important because you want children to embrace getting routine things done in terms of, you don't want, obviously emergency is different, but getting vaccinated, getting routine checkups, going to the doctor is not a sentence. It's not a punishment. So I think you're right. People need to think that psychologically you're doing something to a child if you're not preparing them for the visit.
Right. I totally agree. And I think we as parents are sometimes afraid. We as parents honestly have a harder time often with the vaccination process than the baby does.
Exactly.
I've known several pediatricians to say, you know what, you know, mom, maybe we should have you wait outside.
The anxiety level is too high with mom. Yeah.
Yes.
The baby gets a shot and mom passes out.
Exactly.
Right. In that very gentle and soothing tone, you know, we're trying to make this not so much of an anxious or an eventful filled with anxiety.
That's right.
We definitely want to make it something that the child realizes, okay, this is something that we need. We need to get this so that we can be healthy and we can face the world.
You bet.
I think that sometimes is difficult, depending on your experience personally as a parent with vaccines, maybe as a child or going to the doctor as a child. Sometimes those might not have been the most positive experiences. And thus you in some ways may project or predict, you know, those similar types of experiences for your baby. But we as providers really try, you know, our best to make it so that it's not a negative and it's not something that is a bad experience. It is something that we encourage and definitely want to make sure that everybody is up to date and protected.
Yes, that is the bottom line. You know, Dr. Hunter, as we wrap up our podcast today, we would be remiss if we didn't ask, is there anything that we did not talk about, that we did not discuss, that you did not bring to the forefront that is important in your mind that we need to leave our listeners with today? Because we do not want to end this podcast with something that we did not touch on. So is there any topic that we did not discuss today, in your opinion?
Well, I think that just we've talked about a lot.
Yes.
And I think that
Thank
it's important
for
us to realize that, you know, kids need to be vaccinated. And I think kids need to be specifically vaccinated for COVID. A lot of times you'll hear parents say, well, you know, I've never gotten the flu vaccine. I didn't get that COVID vaccine. I don't think my kids need to be vaccinated. Unless you are going to keep your child at home and not allow them to participate in any activities with other children in an environment of other people, they are going to need to be vaccinated. It is so important that we as a community are vaccinated. You know, it's a healthy community that is vaccinated. When there are lacking vaccinations amongst children, especially, that's when we start to see disease outbreaks. That's when we start to see problems of viral illnesses occurring. And then we're trying to find the basis and eliminate that outbreak. Whereas if we encourage vaccinations, then we don't see those specific outbreaks occur. Children are less likely to experience serious or severe illness than adults. Again, children are so resilient. Some have become sick. There are some, again, that have complications. We talked about the serious complications that would require emergency attention or emergency medical attention for a child. That being persistent fever, shortness of breath, again, any kind of chest pain or cardiac symptoms, that's the time to take that child, you know, to the doctor, because that is not something to play around with. But if we're not vaccinated, children are more likely to have complications from a viral illness than they are if they are vaccinated. Again, the vaccination provides that protective coating. It's like just armor, and it allows for you to continue to function and play as normal and participate in activities as normal because you have the protection you need to fight off any exposures that you may encounter during your routine daily schedule. I just want to encourage those parents who may have some vaccine hesitancy to really consider this as a protection for your child. We as parents want to do everything possible to make sure our children grow up healthy and whole and not ill.
Yes.
We don't want to have to miss school. We don't want to have to miss activities.
Or worse.
We don't want to have to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to die.
Right.
All right. We don't want to see statistics and poor outcomes because we missed an opportunity to protect our child from something that is completely protectable. Like we can have that protection and decrease the seriousness or totally eliminate the exposure to certain viral illnesses.
And excellent points. Everything that you've said today is just bringing home the fact that you want your child, babies, the infant, the children, to have a fair shot at being a healthy adult, to be a healthy and happy adult as part of our community. Dr. Hunter, you have been excellent. Thank you so very much for your time today. You are very well spoken and we appreciate you being with us today. So that is going to wrap up today's Vax Matters. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you've learned, we know you have learned, new facts that you weren't aware of. Join us next time for Vax Matters.